Welcome to Tales of a Per Entrepreneur with your host, Dr. Biz, aka Jamie Reeves.
Welcome to Tales of a Per Entrepreneur, a podcast that tells the stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And if you are a business owner and a parent, I salute you, as they're two of the hardest things you can do, and you are doing both together. I'm your host, Jamie Reeves, aka Dr. Biz, and on today's episode is a guest who has navigated himself away from the 9-to-5 hustle and grind. By mastering the art of the side hustle, Ian has transformed his vision into a multi-million pound property portfolio without letting his day job take a backseat. His journey hasn't been without its sacrifices, though, and yet his unwavering commitment ensures that his family, his wife, 4 young children and Coco the dog remains his top priority. Beyond the boardroom and property sites, Ian battles his own fairway challenges with a real bad golf habit. Yep, he's less Tiger Woods and more Tabby Cat. Please show respect for how I never went fully carry on there. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the pod, Ian Block.
Hello, how are we doing?
How are you doing, Ian?
Yeah, very well, thank you. You?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Really excited to have a good chat with you today. So, let's get straight into it. Why property and why not start your own business and go down that route? Why did you decide property was for you?
Right, so I've been employed by Lloyds Bank since the year 2000. Yeah. Worked my way up the corporate ladder, as my mum and dad told me to do and what I should be doing. Yeah. And you know what I mean, got to quite a senior level within the bank. Always wanted to get into property, right? Mm-hmm. But it was never as a, I'm going to get into business, into property and create a huge portfolio. It was a bit more of a long-term investment. And we bought our first one in 2014, the year my first son was born. And it was just a standard buy-to-let, made £100, £150 and put some money in the pocket, was paying off a mortgage of a house where somebody was also living in. But in 2016, my corporate world changed, and the goalposts were moved massively, and I was asked to divest the business. So we went from around 300 staff, 2 big car supermarkets, sort of working 7 days a week in the retail industry, to doing 5 days a week and down to 15 staff. And I was like, wow, somebody can sort of have that much of an impact on my life, that I'm not in control of that. And that was sort of one of the things for me to say, right, somebody's view about how a business should be run is out of my control. And although I didn't lose my job, and I was the one chosen to lead it on into the future since then, other people were either toopied to another business, were made redundant, and their lives changed significantly, where mine did change, but I still had a role to play within the bank.
Yeah. So what then led you to kind of building the property instead of when you had that readjustment? I guess some others got made redundant and went on to other jobs, and some set up their own businesses so that they could be the masters of their own destiny. So why did you choose property to be that, pardon the pun, vehicle to take you to?
So when we bought our first one, we quite quickly got to 3.
Yeah.
And each were making like £100 each. So it was a nice thing that some mortgage was paying off, but it was always seen as a longer term sort of retirement plan.
Yeah.
And we'd run out of money. We had no more money for others. And I was away on holiday in Lanzarote with the family. We had 2 children at the time. Number 3 was on its way, and I was sitting by the pool reading a couple of books. One was Simon Zutzi's Property Magic, and the other one was 45 Ways of Getting into Property by Rob Moore and Rob Homer. And something just clicked after reading them books to say, look, we can make a business out of this, really increase our cash flow from earning more than just £100 a month. And at the time, we was buying a bigger house. And I said to the wife, look, I don't want to buy such a big house. I want to buy something smaller, but use the other equity to buy some more property, but do something different with it than just the family buy-to-let. And that's where We then chose to try serviced accommodation, where you rent it out in a short-term way. But I also then, when invested in my own education, into HMOs, which is house and multiple occupancy, where it's a shared house where they shared like living areas, kitchen areas, and sometimes bathrooms and things like that. So that was then the catalyst where we started to earn some real money out of property. Mm-hmm. In regards to, we went from £100 per property per month to upwards of £1,000 per property. And then, well, that was from one property, not like all of them. So all of a sudden it was like, wow, how many do we actually need now? Not necessarily to replace my income of the job, because we were still quite comfortable. Where I'm happy doing what I'm doing from a point of view of, I get so much free learning from so many more clever people than me. Yeah. Whereas if I was a small business owner out on my own, I'd be paying maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of pounds to somebody as a mentor, as a business.
Yeah.
And at that time, I couldn't get my head around why I would need to pay for mentors. Now, if you ask me that question later on, I have an absolute different view now.
Yeah.
But that's how then we recognised that we could actually build a side hustle and additional streams of income through property to support what we get from our day job. And then from then on, really, it's just grown arms, legs, bricks, mortar, all that type of thing. And it's created us such a wonderful lifestyle now where we earn more money through property than we do through the day job. But we still choose to keep the day job. Now,
so I've got two kind of questions that are whirling around in my head as you're talking through all that at the moment. The one about learning and mentors, we'll park for a minute because we'll come back to that in a bit. But the one that I'm really interested in is somebody that's very much all about the balance of time and work. How the hell do you balance your own business, somebody else's business, and your family business? And manage to kind of spin all of those plates all together?
Yeah, look, so I think I mentioned I was a slave to the 60-hour work week before we divested the business. It was always everything. I nearly missed the birth of my first son because we was opening up a new car supermarket. And once he was born, I didn't have the time off because I wanted to get straight back into work. And then you realise you're just a number. You know what I mean? And it was a case of, right, let's realign priorities. They come along. They need to come first. And everything else needs to fit in around them.
Yeah.
But from a point of view of property, people talk about it as being passive income and you don't have to do nothing. And there is an element of that to it. But you're also still having to find the properties. You're still having to fund the properties. And even if somebody manages the property for you, they're going to tell you that there's a problem in the property and it needs to get sorted, and you may need to sort of challenge the cost or get your own people in. So it's not passive at all. There's always something to do from it. But it was really family first. My business then was the most important thing. And I slowly sort of realized my time within the day job need to be readjusted, and it was no longer the 60-hour work weeks, because I started to recognise that although I had a salary at Lloyds and my contracted hours were 35 hours a week, I wasn't doing 35 hours a week, I was doing 60 hours a week. Mm. So divide my salary by the 60 hours a week that I was actually doing, I wasn't earning that much over minimum wage.
Yeah,
and that was like, wow. So I then started to realign my time that I was doing over and above for no extra money into my own business, where I then started earning more and more money, but was able to sort of systemize and automate things.
Yeah.
And that was, again, some of the other learning that you get working for a big corporate company like Lloyds. And my P&L responsibility was circa £1 billion a year. Because we sell over 100,000 cars a year.
Yeah.
So that was a huge responsibility, right? But when you come to apply it into your own smaller businesses, the principles that you get from working for a big corporate, it's sort of makes your smaller business really easy to run.
So when you were doing your 60-hour weeks, how much scheduling and planning of your time were you doing at that point?
None. I was going into work, and I because I was a senior manager within the part, it was a case of, what do I do to keep myself busy so I look as if I'm the first in the office and last in the office? Because I thought that was what I needed to be. And it was all about working the hours rather than being effective.
Yeah.
And that's where my journey, my education through reading lots of books, listening to lots of podcasts, joining lots of mentoring clubs and getting mentors myself, they've actually challenged me in that mindset and flip that around, where in my work now, I'm probably more productive than ever. We deliver more than we do than ever. I've been given extra areas, but I still don't do any more than I need to do. My boss sort of jokes with me, and I talk quite candid about my aspiration to work a 4-hour work week, off the back of reading that book. And I'm always challenging my guys and my team in there. What's the one thing that we can do where that if we do it deems that thing unnecessary or reduces the pain of doing it?
Yeah.
But that only comes from investing in yourself, in your own education, in your own knowledge, surrounding yourself with the right people, that you then get that learning to implement into the day job. And look, it's difficult at times because we're a big corporate body and you want to embed some entrepreneurial principles, which aren't always great, but that's enabled particularly me to flourish, particularly our team to flourish. And that's really, that actually comes out in our colleague engagement results in the bank, that we've got some of the best colleague engagement results because we try and do things a bit different.
Yeah, yeah. It's rare that you're in such a large organisation but then still have the freedom to put those kind of systems and processes in place to allow you to... This is my kind of perfect way of living. It would be to be known as the hardest working lazy bastard ever. Well, and that's probably something that you're probably known as within Lloyd's right now, I guess, with the way that you've structured everything that you do.
Yeah, like people don't come up to me and go, "Hello, Ian, how you doing?" It's, "How'd you find the time?" They don't ask. And it's always, they always want to know. Like, we post daily on social media. We get lots of traction. But my content has been written the month before. It's posted by our virtual assistants on a daily basis. So while I'm tucked up in bed, my posts have already gone out.
Yeah.
So it's me who answers them all, right? But the scheduling and the, I suppose, the redefining of them and that type of thing has been already done for me. And it's just little things like that.
Yeah.
That buy back your time.
Yeah, it's using those systems and processes and delegation that kind of, they all sound so kind of unsexy, I guess, but everybody wants to make more money without working harder. That's kind of where everybody wants to be. And it's using those systems, processes, delegation and other people's time that help you achieve that, isn't it?
100%. One of the big things recently, we had some virtual assistants leave us in the middle of last year, and then we started taking on all that work ourselves again, just because we're just going to do it and get it done. And it started dragging you down, become really difficult, lots of challenges in regards to, I'm just going to do that before we go out, and not the usual family front of mind and first in everything we do. And I read Dan Martell's book called Buy Back Your Time.
Okay.
And that was about November time. And it was a real realization again to, right, we need to get another virtual assistant back in and hand some of these tasks back off to her. And again, it's been a revelation. So we've got a virtual assistant out in India. They will look after our social media, content creation and posting, email, inbox management. So I probably get around 100 emails a day in the various other businesses we've got. That's all dealt with, and probably once filtered out, I probably only have to answer 5.
Yeah.
But how many times are you going through and you see an email come in the inbox, you stop your work, what you're doing, you go to that, oh, it's irrelevant, but you've wasted 2 or 3 minutes of doing that, and then you've got to get back into the zone to where you was to carry on with your work.
So that's 10 minutes wasted then, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And all this time adds up.
Yeah.
When you want to be really effective with your time.
Yeah. The lesson I remember from that is probably very close to the start of my business journey was I was getting some teachings of a guy called Perry Marshall, and he talked about if you're doing 10, you shouldn't be doing £10 an hour jobs. You want to be doing the £100 an hour jobs or the £1,000 an hour jobs. And as you build your business and put kind of middle management in, you want your middle management people to be doing £100 an hour jobs, and you doing the £1,000 per hour thinking jobs and having that space to think. And if you're doing the £10 an hour jobs, when you've got virtual assistants, whether you employ them from further afield like India or the Philippines or even locally, that it's just crazy if you're kind of there doing those kind of things on a regular.
100%. And we've had to embed that in our work life, but also in my personal life. And I have real challenges with my wife in regards to that. She goes, right, the grass needs cutting. And I'm like, okay. And she went, well, aren't you going to do it? I'm like, no, I'll just pay somebody £25 to come and do a good job of the garden. She went, oh, I'll do it. I'm like, but that's their job. That's what they like doing. That's what they're experts at. When I do it, I go over the lawnmower wire and we're having to tape it back up and I've messed it and I miss big sections, and she points it out, where these guys come and do it and they do it really well. Yeah. Now, I can, in that time that they're doing that, I'm maybe going to meet an investor or going to view a property or doing some research of the stuff I like doing, I'm passionate about doing, and actually adds more value to our lifestyle.
Yeah, I remember when we had the kitchen done. So we had a brand new kitchen put in, walls freshly plastered, and all we wanted it doing was painting white. And family members couldn't get their heads around why I wasn't doing that and painting that white. When I've just spent a fair few grand on a brand new kitchen, the last thing I want is white paint splashes looking all uneven, when for, I think we paid the guy £400 to whitewash it and do a proper job of it, and I didn't have to get my hands dirty. And that to me is a much better way to spend £400 and can leave me in here tapping away, doing my thing and trying to earn back that £400 and some on top of that.
Absolutely. The other day we had a tenant move out, a new one move in. My wife is actually helps out in the property management business. She went, it needs a new toilet seat. I've bought one from B&M. Just go round and pop it on before they do it. No problem. I'm like, okay. It took me nearly 3 hours because I broke the things on the bottom of the... And somebody who's like our handyman, who's the expert, it took them 5-10 minutes. Yeah. But it's me that I broke something because I'm not good at doing it, then get frustrated, then get upset, then get, you know what I mean? And it's just recognize that you can pay somebody that type of money. That's what they choose to do and want to do. Mm-hmm. And they're the experts. And again, that's one of the other things, that it takes time to get over that, and you've got to trial it and understand and get through that.
Well, if you think that handyman maybe charge 20, 30 quid an hour, okay? It, whatever the you reckon you can earn per hour, right? I'm guessing it's more than a handyman, without being disrespectful to handymen, okay? So 3 hours, you hated the job anyway, and you broke the toilet seat, so you had to go and get another one.
It's all that, and that's why I'm embedded into this piece, but I still have to take my wife on that journey to that she understands it as well, because she's run her own business for a number of years, but it's only very small. It's a personalized gift company.
Yeah.
And she's always done everything herself.
Yeah. So tell me about how you got back into learning then, because most people, especially when they're on the career path, unless you get sent on a course by one of your line managers, learning stopped whenever you left school or university. So what brought you back into learning and trying to kind of expand your mind a little bit more?
So I think I'm going to go back to around 2019. So I always read books on holiday, yeah, sitting by the pool. But that sort of changed once you have children, because you don't get peace of time to sit down or do anything. I'm playing in the pool. So I started listening on Audible. And quite quickly, I found with my time traveling to and from work or doing different things, that I was able to plug myself in, increase the speed. So I'm leveraging a bit more time to get a bit more learning.
Yeah.
And I started to listen to books. And I really got the book. And I think around 2019, I listened to around 25 to 28 books in that year. And I was like, wow, I really like this. I've got so much learning, so much understanding. And one of them early books was one of your previous guests, John Lamerton.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went to a free photo shoot to get some headshots for your website. Somebody was giving away for free. We got talking. I started talking about my passion for reading and listening. And they said, "You should. This guy's part of our club, right? You should read his book called Big Ideas for Small Businesses."
Yeah.
Read that book. Loved it. And another book I read, and I can't remember which one it was, it talked about reaching out to authors and people that you wouldn't usually reach out to say, look, I really enjoyed your book, thanks for that, because there's a bit of sense of reaching out and making contact with them, but also possibly where they're getting something back from you, like that you really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And we kept talking. I joined his mailing list, and lots of mails were coming out without... the link's not working. So I kept going back. Look, I might as well get a job for you because these links aren't working. Make sure you update this one. And we just got chatting, and had a lot of things in common. Like he liked his football, played a bit of golf. And he sent me a link for his second book called Routine Machine. Mm-hmm. That was on Audible. Read that one, and I just got the book. And then I seen he was running a club called the 1% Club. But I was like... yeah, I've never really had a mentor of a light. I've not really got on with them. It's not really worked out for me. And I was a bit reluctant to pay for somebody to...
Was that a mentor then within the day job that you'd had before?
Yeah. As he was identified as somebody who had an opportunity to quite a big career within the bank, you was given a mentor.
Right.
But at this time now, I'm out of my mindset of wanting to grow into a corporate career. I'm all about now building my property business.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that they were telling me, we just didn't align with.
Yeah.
So my mind was now out in the business world about creating my own side hustle and enhancing it and making it bigger. And that's when I was on a networking event, and somebody on the networking event said, you should start your day with picking the easiest task first, because it gives you some momentum to do the other tasks that are a bit harder. And I'm like, I disagree with you. you should always do your hardest and one task first. Eat that frog, exactly. And we was having a bit of a debate on the thing, and I was like, I use these planning documents where I'm doing my one thing and I do my one thing. And this is what I took from John and the stuff that he'd sent me. And I wasn't part of the club at the time. And somebody on the call went, that's from the 1% club, that is. And I'm like, am I not supposed to share them? And he's like, I'm part of that club. I think you'll really enjoy it. So after that call on that networking group, I had a chat with him, and it was Rupert Bassadone. I'm not sure if you've heard of Rupert.
Yeah, and I think Rupert was in the 1% club and I was in it.
So. Yeah. So at the time, then I had a call with him after, and he said, you'd love this club. And I got in touch with John. I was like, right, okay, I'm going to join. And that was, I believe, in March 2020. And never looked back. It's been brilliant for me from a point of view, like-minded individuals. It's only I think it's about £100 a month, and for me originally committing to that was like, oh no, I get 10 times that value back. I now actually got three mentors in total now, where I have a property specific one which I pay considerably amount for, And I've also got back into having a mentor at Lloyds, right? Because I've realigned my thought process to that to say, I'm getting all this learning from a like a board member, that C-level membership at Lloyds, and I'm getting that for free.
Yeah.
So all the risk, the governance, the compliance, the things from a big corporate that I can then embed into my own business, and I'm getting that for free. So I've gone a bit of a full circle in Lloyds, but absolutely I've got my own mentors. And I'd say to anybody now that you only know what you know. I always thought I can just go off and Google it and I'll find out what I need. But if you don't know what you need, how do you know?
I did a big post. Funny you should mention that. I did a big post on socials the other day about everything that you need to know is on Google and YouTube. So everything that any coach or any mentor will teach you is already out there on the World Wide Web. The problem is you've got to find the right version of it because it's so vast that to try and find what you really want out of it would be a nightmare. So here's a question for you. Which do you think gives you a better return on investment? Investing in yourself and your learning or property?
Wow, what a good question. 100% always in yourself. Because if you don't constantly keep investing in yourself, I wouldn't have come up with all the creative strategies. I look back at my property journey where I was making £100 per property. And that's because I was paying off the mortgage, because I was brought up to think that you had to pay off a mortgage. Yeah. Where you don't, you can just service the interest on it. So we've gone from housing families to serviced accommodation on a short let, to housing young professionals. We now house the vulnerable, where we've got asylum seekers, domestically abused women, young offenders, people who are abstinent from drink and drugs. We provide them a home to enhance their recovery.
Yeah.
We now have an education program online. We mentor people. So I look at my journey and go, wow, that's come all that long way. But that's only for me constantly investing in myself.
Yeah.
Then understanding more about property, the different strategies and the different things we can do. And ultimately then the byproduct of that is we've been able to get the rewards financially for that, which has created a much better lifestyle for us. So I'm always now about the inputs, doing the right inputs and doing the right inputs consistently, and the byproduct of doing the right thing over a sustained period of time becomes the financial rewards.
Yeah. I think habits, creating the right habits is so key to building those consistent things. And sometimes my biggest learning from last year, and I've probably said this on every podcast that I've recorded over the last few weeks, is that sometimes we get too focused on the results and not focused enough on the habits and the consistencies that cause the results. And if we do the right things in those habits and that consistency, then the results will come anyway. We just need to be patient and play the long game.
100% on that. And I've got a real good example. So at the moment, I'm doing something called 75 Hard.
I was going to ask you about that because I've seen it on LinkedIn. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
So this is something by an American guy called Andy Frisella. And it's all about mental toughness, right? But part of that mental toughness, you have to do a series of tasks sort of every day.
Yeah.
And these are, you've got to do 2 45-minute workouts a day. One has to be outside regardless of the weather.
Yeah.
You have to be on a diet. Yeah. Whatever the diet is, you choose your diet, but it's you've got to stick to that. You've got to drink a gallon of water a day. And hence I keep drinking it, because a gallon of water is a lot.
You have how to much is it for the younger bucks that only work in metric, how much is a gallon of
that's nearly 5 liters. Yeah. So okay. So it's a lot to get through the day. You also have to take a progress photo. Now, the progress photo, you think, well, why that? Why such small detail? And it's all about small details. So if you miss it, you have to go back to the beginning again, day one. Right. And the fifth one then is you read 10 pages of a self-development book. So no listening, only reading, right? Okay. And along with that, there's no cheat meals, no takeaways, and no alcohol.
Right, okay.
So my wife said to me, I've been thinking about doing this for a period of time. And my wife said, why don't you do dry January? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. She went, I told you you wouldn't be able to do it. I said, I'm going to do 75 hard. And she was like, what's that? Explain to me. She went, you'll never do that. So yesterday was the halfway point that we've just got. And I suppose the purpose of how this started, right, we talked about what's the result going to look like. And I knew if I'd done all the things that I was meant to do, I would lose weight. But I didn't want to weigh myself, right, and have that target looking in. I just wanted to go through the process. But I look at my body when I'm taking that progress photo now, and I think, you know, that bod's disappearing. Yeah. You know what I mean? My moves are painting outwards now instead of downwards. So for me, it's exactly that. I'm consistently doing these things day in, day out, and I'm seeing them results in my body shape, in my skin, in my productivity, in my alertness. It's all a byproduct of consistently doing the right things.
Yeah, yeah. So diet has been a big thing for me too recently. So there's a fitness influencer called Eddie Abu, and you might have seen him on Instagram. He's always slating the supermarkets and how sugar is the devil and everything else, and how to eat real foods. And it's pretty much kind of like protein, but proper protein, not kind of whey protein. He's very against that. Eggs are kind of superfood, so and kind of fats and maybe some green leafy veg like broccoli or something like that. So I've been really advocating doing that and trying to steer away from sugar. And I've noticed that I always used to get around this time of day, I would be absolutely knackered. I'd have that kind of real slump, just after dinner slump that you used to get. Since doing that, no. And I went on a training course where there was some like cakes and nice shit to eat, as you do. I had some, and for that first half an hour of that training course in the afternoon, I was kind of like this. I was like, please don't snore. Please don't grind your teeth. Please don't snore. Because I just had those proper nods from that sugar crash. I think it's so undervalued getting the right things into your body that then helps you in a business way. It's not just about kind of looking better for summer. It really affects your productivity, I think.
100%. You know what I mean? I've always had this routine, which I've always said to myself, if I can do these three things every day, I've beat the day, right? And that's what my property education program is called, is because we're trying to get people into routines and doing their own thing. Now, I never say to people, this is my routine, you must follow it. It's all about creating your own. So I get up in the morning, the first thing I do, right, is work on my business, on my one thing. This is my three things that I'm doing on my wall, always visible to me. So I work on them just for 15 minutes each day. Mm-hmm. Do I do 15 minutes every day? Yes. Does it turn into longer some days? Absolutely. Because sometimes you just get into the zone and you're doing it and you're off. As soon as I've done that, I get on my Peloton. Peloton's right behind me in my office there. I go, same thing again. Can I do 15 minutes? Yeah. If I do 15 minutes, it's a bad day. But most days I will get to 45 minutes. Right? So I've done that. I then start the day job. Go through all that. And then in the afternoon, I always take time out in my diary to go and plug myself in, take Coco for a walk. And that's where I do my learning, whether that's podcasts, the books. And what I say, if I've done them three things each day where I've worked on my business, moving the things forward, I've looked after my health in regards to getting some proper exercise, done some learning by taking the dog for a walk at the same time and plug myself in, I've beat the day. And if I can do that 4 or 5 times a week, great, I've beat the week. 3 or 4 times a month, I've beat the month. And then so on. And all these tiny 1%, tiny gains start to stack up and compound into something really substantial.
Yeah, yeah. So what are the things that you do now then in your daily routine that you would have kind of scoffed at 20 years ago? What are some of the regular routines and habits that you do outside of those little things that you've just mentioned?
They always take the kids to school and always pick them up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Just little things like that. Just being able to read the bedtime book to them. Them reading to me, rereading to them. Yeah. Just little things like that now have become more important, where probably a bit younger, I was always out. We played football at a decent level, non-league. So we was training Tuesday night, Thursday nights. We was playing Saturdays all around the country. You're out then Saturday night. You're up Sunday morning to play football again when you probably shouldn't have been. And it all revolved around that and it going out and having a good time, where a lot of my friends still want to go and do that. You know what I mean? Some have been married, divorced and that type of thing. Then I look at them now and go, do I want to do that? And I go, yes, sometimes. But in the main, most of the times, I know I don't want to because of the after effects of it. Yeah. And the after effects don't just impact the next day. It can impact the next couple of days. And it also impacts the sort of stuff that you're putting in your body then from a eating point of view, takeaways and all that. So the mindset and the wants has definitely changed. And this is the next stage, I think, of my journey is this 75 hard program.
Yeah.
Is yes, we do that, but what does the plan look like after it? Because I was always one who was really sociable on the golf. A few beers after, I like a glass of wine with my meal and the, you know what I mean? Sometimes it was all too easy to, that one glass turns into two glasses into the bottle. And now, not drinking for like 38, 39 days, just not missed it.
It's funny that, because I'm from an entertainment background. So obviously beer and alcohol and everything goes hand in hand with the entertainment industry. And I gave up drinking about 8 years ago for that very reason that you talked about, that if you go and are sociable and even only having five or six beers, that could be then transformed into a 3-day hangover. Now, when you own your own business and you've got three kids, a 3-day hangover is just non-negotiable. So I was like, screw this, I'm giving up drinking. And gave it up. And apart from Liverpool getting to the FA Cup final a few years back, because they only had Bex Blue at the Green Man, and that wasn't appropriate for singing Liverpool songs, so I got on some beers instead. I've pretty much been sober since. It's interesting how alcohol can really affect. I think it's just energy. I think as you get older, you value energy 10 times more than you do having a pint.
I think it is, and you can just do more stuff with the kids, you know what I mean? You're chasing them around the house, around the garden.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I always thought I'd still kept myself in half-decent shape after the football.
Yeah.
But when you're blowing after about 5 minutes of chasing them around, and you think, yeah, this is not the case. This is not going to be good if I don't do something about it longer term.
So how do you think things are going to look for you then after the 75-day challenge?
I honestly don't know. The person I'm doing it with, we're just going through that process at the moment. I've got the book right by me. Somebody sent me this on LinkedIn, right? So after I posted that, I've done that post about I'm doing 75 hard, somebody got in touch and said, can I have your address, please? And I was like, why? And I don't know. And they've sent me this book, which is the 75 hard book. And it talks about a life after 75 hard. So yeah. I'm just going through that now about what that looks like. We'll wait and see. I'm not. If you'd have asked me, like, even just before Christmas, would you give up drink for 75 days? No. And now you're considering, do I ever probably want one again? Maybe I do, maybe I don't, but it's previously it wouldn't have even been like in the thought process.
It's really funny when you go back to drinking after you've drank non-alcoholic stuff, because for me, all I could taste was the chemicals. So now if I have a proper pint of Guinness, as opposed to an alcohol-free pint of Guinness, I can really taste the difference. The proper Guinness, as people would call it, tastes of chemicals, whereas the alcohol-free one tastes of beer. And I'm sure that those that drink will probably say the other way around, that alcohol-free one tastes of pish and the proper one is the proper one.
Yeah, I'm just working my way through which are the good ones. I'm happy with the Heineken ones at the moment. I had my first alcohol-free Guinness after golf last weekend.
So it's
not just that, but it was the... It's being able to make 2.5 hours of time a day to do all these two lots of exercises, to do the reading, to do the all these types of things where if you said to somebody, right, you've got to find 2.5 hours a day, you're like, well, I'm never going to be able to do that. But it talks about the mental toughness, the desire, the want to actually do that and make a difference to your life because it will serve you longer term.
I'm guessing there's two things in there that are really key to kind of making this 75-day challenge a success. The first is your goals. So having that clear goal and that clear vision of what you want to achieve out of it. And the second, it's going back to what you've become well known for in your day job, is scheduling and being able to plan it properly. Because if you can be disciplined enough to keep to that schedule and then keep your eye on the prize enough for reaching that goal, then that makes that 75-day challenge, if it's aligned to your values, so much easier.
Yeah, look, there's been a few, like a couple of weeks ago, it was my daughter's birthday. We'd been out to Pizza Express. They had all the nice trimmings. We got back at 8 o'clock and it was the night of the storm and I hadn't done my outside workout. So, and I had to get my kit on. I had to get outside and go to the dog. Right, you're coming out. And she's like, not a chance.
You're on your own.
I had to go out at that time of night to go and get that workout in. Yeah. And there's been times like that where it'd be really easy just to go, you know what, I'm not going to do it. But because you've created that momentum, you've got a number of ticks in your box. You don't want to break that chain. So it's become really important to me. And what I try and do now is try and get as much done of it during the day so I finish earlier and earlier. Whereas when I was first starting it out, you're running around trying to make sure everything gets done and you're going right up to the end of the night.
Yeah.
It doesn't really... What I have noticed as well is I thought I used to get bad sleep, right? And then I used to wear... It's like a Whoop band.
Yeah.
And this used to monitor my sleep, my friend. And I used to have some really good sleep, like about 8 hours a night and some decent, deep sleep. Now I've stopped drinking alcohol. I'm still getting the same amount of sleep, but the quality of the sleep is on a different level.
Yeah. Yeah. They say that alcohol really kind of, you don't, although they say it makes you sleep, it doesn't make you deep sleep. It keeps you in that very kind of light sleep. That's why you wake up feeling so tired. So with what you've done with your learning and things, how do you think that's affected you as a parent and helped you and your children?
There's just various things in regards to making sure you make time. So again, previously, my rock was probably my job. And then the sand and the water from the story was probably the family and the other stuff I like doing had to fit around that. Now that's absolutely flipped round where it's absolutely family first, holidays, school events, all that type of thing, get put in first, birthdays, everything is revolved around that. I then put all the stuff around my business. I play a lot of golf, I do a lot of networking, do a lot of hosting investors on the golf course or taking them out. That then goes in and then I fit my job around that. And as long as I still show up for my job and do a good job and my performance isn't impacted, these other things then become the sort of importance. And we love a board game in this family.
Yeah.
So we play a lot of games like Monopoly, like Hotel, where it's trying to teach the children about financial education, because we're going to school and nobody's, we're not taught about taxes. We're not taught about how to utilize money, what we should be saving, what we should be investing, what we should be giving back to others.
Yeah.
In some form or another. So we do a lot of things like that. My eldest son, he's come out and he's helped me sort of do room viewings. He's helped me sort of get prepared for when the housemates are coming round.
How old is he?
He's 9.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
Yeah. So he has a real interest. So when we're driving round, he's like, Dad, there's one of our houses. There's one. I was right. Okay, how much do we get for that one? He's got a really good memory. And he's like, yeah, that one's like Old Kent Road, isn't it? We just don't get as much for that one. But there's our Mayfair one, because I know we've got 6 housemates in that one and they're paying £600 a month each. Yeah. So yeah, he's getting into it. The girl, she likes the design of stuff. Mm-hmm. So Indy, she's just turned 8. So she'll be telling me, yeah, I don't like this house. We need to make it nicer so the housemates will enjoy it better.
Yeah.
And then the other two are 5 and 3, so they've not got into it quite yet. But, yeah, so for me, it's trying to keep the education fun with it, but make it relevant to what we're trying to do as a family together and create that legacy. So, yes, we have a nice lifestyle and we can do all the nice things together, but it's really leaving a legacy for them when we eventually pass on.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, I've got a few questions that I'd like to ask you that I ask everybody. Usually I can find it and I've got a post-it note. Ah, there we go. So what are the key 3 behaviours that you would like to install into people?
Integrity, mm-hmm. right? And that's, for me, just doing what you'd say you'd do.
Yeah.
We have so many people that, oh yeah, I'll be out, I'll come and sort that property for you, like trades and maybe some potential housemates. Oh yeah, I'll see you there at the property. And just don't turn up and don't have the courtesy of phoning you and telling you why. So integrity is a big one for me. Consistency. You know what I mean? You keep doing the right things and you consistently show up, you're gonna reap the benefits of that. And it's the delayed gratification, the patience of doing that.
And that's so hard in modern society today, having that patience, because you stick something in the microwave and 2 minutes later you've got a meal, and you go and watch something on TV. It's not like you've got to go around Blockbuster, pick up the video, make the decision and come back, pop it in the machine. It's just ping Netflix or Sky Plus or whatever you use. So having that patience to keep that consistency is so hard.
Yeah, and people aren't used to it nowadays, are they? Specifically with convenience, you look at Amazon, sometimes you get stuff delivered the same day. People want everything now, and if they don't get everything now, they want to move on to the shiny penny.
Yeah.
But when I work with people into property, I always try and set that stall out quite early that, look, this is a journey, right? It will take you 10 years to get rich overnight,
yeah,
right? But I'm just managing your expectations. So you can just build it slowly. Yes, you could probably go and replace your job in 12 months. Yes, you could probably replace your income. But you're going to be working a 100-hour work week and a hustle and grinding yourself to the bone where that doesn't fit with me anymore.
Yeah.
And the third one is fun. We've got to have a bit of fun while we do it. In our house, we're always on the wind-up. We're always playing jokes with each other. Being from probably football background and in a changing room, you had to make sure you looked after yourself because you might have seen some DP in your pants or your socks sewn up. So, we bring that fun element into everything we do, whether that's our work life, golf, family life. That's a big thing for us as well.
Cool. So what was the first record you ever bought?
Nina Cherry, Buffalo Stance.
What an album. I went to Cyprus on holiday the year that came out, and Cyprus wasn't in the EU then, so they had all the knockoff copies as they do, and I wore the cassette of that out. It was an amazing album. That's taken me proper back to my childhood.
Yeah.
What's the most memorable place that you visited?
Cyprus.
Okay.
Yeah, we got married in Cyprus, Aphrodite Hills.
Oh, nice.
So
very good golf course.
Absolutely, I played. We actually had our reception in the golf club in the golf club venue.
Right.
So yeah, we played it on the morning of my wedding as well. So we went out there. We chose that as the venue. We had what we thought was going to be a small wedding, but about 100 people end up coming out.
Wow.
And then we've gone back there a few times.
Yeah.
With the children, it's just such a lovely place. We love the sun, and just a lot of obviously happy memories there.
I used to live in Cyprus. I spent 3 years out there entertaining, so I know the island very well. What are your top three books that you can recommend to people?
First one changed my life: Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah.
If you get that, and you understand assets and liabilities. It can change your life, because it certainly has mine. I always got to put one of John's in, right? Because both him and Jason and the 1% Club have had such a positive impact on my life. So I always like the first one. His other three books are good, but I always go back to Big Ideas for Small Businesses.
Yeah.
And a third one. I'm gonna tie between the 12-week year and the One Thing,
okay.
Right? Because the 12-week year has helped me understand how important 90-day plans are, and really working in quick sprints to deliver lots of stuff. And I've actually embedded that in my team in Lloyds for the past 2 years, and they're going, "Oh God, well," and now Lloyds are actually implementing that type of stuff. So I'm like, I told you this is sort of stuff that's really good for you. Yeah. But also the One Thing, because in that 90-day plan, instead of focusing on loads of different things, we try and nail it down to three things, but just focusing on that one thing each week to deliver them things. Because if I turn around at the end of the year and go, what are the things I've delivered in my business? I should have delivered 12 things to move me forward.
Yeah.
So I'd say them are the books that have had a significant impact on my life.
Brilliant. Where can people find you, Ian, if they want to get in touch? And
so for property investing, we have the website, the HMO Professionals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For our property management business, we have the website www.thecohome.life, where we focus on co-living and really putting the housemates at the heart of everything we do. We give them welcome gifts. We put on pizza nights. We put on book clubs to create that community in the house. So we do things a little bit different. And our property education program is beattheday.life.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much for sparing the time and giving up your time to chat with me. And it's been a real pleasure. Really loved hearing your story. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Mr. Ian Block.
Cheers, Jamie. Thanks. Really, really enjoyed that. Much appreciated. We'll be right back.